Started. Okay, it's recording, 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 recording. All right, 1 second.
You boy, mic check 1 2, mic check 1 2. What it do? What the business is? Welcome to another episode of the NBA podcast. I am your co-host, Maurice Prophet,
and I'm Danny Dang.
And that right there, that's something I would not normally do, but because this is a very celebratory episode we're doing today, in the honor of my co-host, my boy, my partner in crime, my ace dog number one boy, Mr. Danny Dang. And because when y'all hear this episode, it will be Mr. Danny Dang's birthday, ladies and gentlemen. Get up, Danny Dang. Get up. Get up for his birthday. Get up for his birthday. And for those of y'all don't know, I'm playing his Boosang theme music, Miss Alexa Bliss, the new Raw Women's Champion, and we're going to touch on that a little bit. That's the boo thing, so, you know, shout out to Danny. I'm going to do that for you, partner, you know what I mean? Do a little intro music for you, bro.
Thank you. She's in Europe right now, so I'm missing her.
She on the road, she missing you, you missing her and everything, so she got that win for you, brother, for real. That was dedicated to you, dog. But, hey, real talk, though, man, for real. Happy birthday, man. It's good to, you know, like, be able to see another year and everything. I know folks kind of, like, cringe at the fact of getting older, but I look at when you get older, you get better. And, you know, this is another year that you're able to see. Not a lot of people were able to say that this year, sadly, but you were one of the very many, or a few, depending on how you look at it, who were able to say that, bro. So I'm glad to see you good and to celebrate another year with you, brother.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel like an old man.
Yeah, man. So you already kind of popped off the birthday celebration. So, you know what I mean? I know you went out last night. So how'd that go?
My cousin Annie was in town for work. She's from Portland. And so we didn't really do anything. We just went out to dinner. She's like, hey, I just want to take you out to dinner. So, yeah, so we went out. She grabbed some wings, nothing too crazy. And then tomorrow, my actual birthday, May 5th, so when people actually listen to this, like probably today or whenever you listen to it.
Cinco de Mayo.
It's a real celebration.
Oh, man. I already know Hennessy is involved. The question is how much?
We're doing I've done it for the last 2 years, so this will be year number 3, and we went to this casino by my place to do Macho Libre, which it will be just like wrestling and cigars and just tacos and just hanging out.
Does that always fall on your birthday because they purposely schedule that event for Cinco de Mayo?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm like, I thought I was following on his birthday, but yeah, but okay, I got you.
Yeah. So it's like perfect storm. It's like, dude, I get wrestling on my birthday. So it's like the only time I can get people together that don't watch wrestling to watch wrestling with me.
Right. Because they're like, all right, we do this for you, brother.
Yeah. They're like, oh, what do you do for your birthday? I'm like, oh, we're going to go watch wrestling.
It's like, what do you think, bro? So they got tacos, they got wrestling and all that good stuff and everything.
So the first year they did it, 2 years ago when they did it, so it's put on by like this local cigar company and so your entrance fee gives you all you can eat taco bar, it gives you the show it gives you a cigar, and then the first year it gave you a beer, a shot, and a margarita. But last year they cut the drinks out on like general admission tickets. You had to buy like the VIP tickets to like have drink included. But it's like not worth it enough to get like the VIP, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to sell the cigars, right? And I don't smoke, so it's like, I'll get my cigar and I'll light it and I'll hold it the whole night. Like, I won't even
babysit a cigar, right?
You know, but that's what they're trying to sell is the cigar. So like, if you buy like the VIP package, like it comes with like tequila tastings and all this stuff, and then you get like this box of cigars. I mean, what am I going to do with a box of cigars?
Right.
Yeah, so we end up just getting, like, the general admission ticket, and then, I mean, you get the tacos, you get a cigar, and then if you want a drink, dude, they're only, like, $5 or something like that. So it's not, it's not, like, too crazy, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and that way, like, because, like, going about it that way is more like, a realistic, you know, more realistic path, because, like you said, like, you don't smoke, so what would you do with that box of cigars? You pay extra for something that you're not even going to use, you know what I mean?
You know, and they're not even, like, super dope cigars either. They're just, like, some local dude makes cigars, and he just happens to like wrestling, too, so.
He got, that motherfucker probably got some White Owls and shit, and just slaps his little label on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That ain't going to tell a difference. Shit.
Yeah, I don't even know what I don't know what a good cigar is or what a bad cigar is. I'm just like, oh, it's a cigar.
Yeah. You know, I used to at one point in my life, I was like kind of fucking with cigars, like kind of like trying to like, study them and everything like that, and you know, try like get the smoothest ones and like you know the distinguish like you know this brand from that brand and whatnot and everything. But I fell off on that though. You know, I fell off hard from that, though.
Right.
But I know that there's a lot involved with, like, the paper that's used and obviously the filling and everything. And even, like, where, like, because there's certain, like, there's certain, the way how they stuff it, like, there's certain, like it's layered, it's layered a specific way. So this way, like, you know, like, you get, like, the real, like, the real good tobacco at certain points of the cigar and everything like that. I can't remember, but there's levels to that shit though, for real. Like when you bump into like a straight up real cigar kind of store, them motherfuckers are hardcore, for real.
Right.
Like they know they shit and everything, you know.
Yep.
I smoked a Cuban once, but I didn't appreciate it because I was so young. I was in high school, and my buddy's dad he had some Cuban cigars. And so he's like, he told me and my buddy, like, you know, come try it out. And so I try it out or whatever. And I was just like, you know, I was like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I took a hit. I was like, I'm straight. And then, like, as I got older, I'm like, man, I wish I could, like, fucking, like, go back and smack myself upside the head. Like, nigga, I appreciate this shit. Get on here. God damn it. You know what I mean?
Right.
One of those joints. But yeah, so y'all got okay. So y'all going to the casino, watch tequila tacos and takedowns, and what else y'all got?
That's about it. That's the only thing that's really planned. There's a Sounders game the next day, so I'm going to that, and then I'll probably just keep it low key. Nothing too crazy.
Good shit. Y'all not pre funking anywhere?
Probably not, just because we got a lot of logistics for people to get out to the casino because it's a little deeper. It's probably like 45 minutes away from here.
Word, okay.
So, you know, it's everyone has like their own ride and stuff, and then it's too hard to try to plan that out.
Nah, I got you. Right. Yeah, no, it makes sense and everything. You know what I mean? Is Chris coming through?
Yep.
Your cousin?
Chris, his wife. My brother's coming. My cousin Paul, his girlfriend's coming. My cousin Teresa, her husband's coming. And then one of my brother's one of the guys that my brother used to work with, he's come in. I know who he is. He's a cool guy. He's come in, and then I don't know who else is coming. I just kind of put it out there. And said, if you want to go, grab a ticket, and I'll see you there.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Got the whole kick in the crew, man. Shit, I need to be out there. 1 year, for real, 1 year I'm going to come out there for your birthday because I want to experience that shit because when you brought that down for me last year, I was like, that shit's out lit as hell. Shit. Either that
and that's what happened. That's what happened with my brother's coworker. We went to the Mariners game a couple weeks ago, and we were kind of just talking. And he's like, "Hey, are you guys doing that wrestling thing again?" And we were like, "Yeah, we're doing." He's like, "Bro, can I come?" I was like, "Yeah, you can come."
Yeah. Hell yeah. Oh yeah. Bring your ass on. Shit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's what I'm saying, man. That's just dope as hell, though. So that's a good way to kick off the weekend and everything, man, for real. So that should be good. That should be good and whatnot. Man, we had a good-ass week, bro. Straight up.
We did have a good week.
Yeah, man. Dude, for those of y'all don't know, but y'all should know by now, if y'all paying attention, we did a bonus episode earlier this week. We interviewed the great Susan Green, a.k.a. Tex. She is a former NWA Women's Heavyweight Champion, and we had an awesome interview. It was close to an hour. I didn't think it was going to be that long. I was thinking, okay, about a 15, 20-minute interview, but, man, we just got to talking, and we got to vibing, and it was love. You know, we let that roll. Talk about her career, talk about her insight of, like, what's happening with today's wrestling and everything, some good-ass stories. It was dope as hell, man. It was love.
It was. It was really good. It was good for us. Good for the show, man.
Hell yeah. And, dog, dude, you see, it's that motherfucking post is still getting our hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit. Like, for real, like, she was popping the past few days, man. She was still popping and everything. Even like Leilani Kai. And shout out to Leilani Kai, former WWF Women's Champion. She's one of the legends. She hit me up and everything as well, and she, because she was like, I'm glad, you know, the interview went well. Let me get the links this way I can hear and everything. I'm not sure if she listened to it yet because she said she was gonna listen to it that night or whatever. But, if we did horrible, she probably would have hit me up and like, you bastards, what the hell is this? That was bullshit. I'm gonna come in and kick your ass in the ass. But that did not happen, obviously. So it was all good. Shout out to Susan Green. You know, please come back on the show, and we'd love to talk to you anytime. It was a good week. We had that. Did you watch Payback?
I did watch Payback.
Yeah. Now, it was an interesting pay-per-view. The best match I saw of the night was Neville and oh boy. Aries.
Yeah, pay-per-view as a whole was kind of blah. Neville Aries was good. Jericho, Kevin Owens was good. That House of Horrors match was like the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
That bullshit, man. You know, the thing is that, like, I get, like, because I get that WWE, especially Vince McMahon, he really wants to be more in the, if you put things together, like, as far as, like, what we've been seeing from the WWE lately, the original content that they've been kind of rolling out, I think he really wants to be more in the movie business. Have you noticed that?
I can see that.
I think he really wants to be more in the movie and television business, and like WWE is obviously an excellent platform to make that happen because you know you have fictional characters, fictional storylines, you know you have all the elements in the on your platform to actually make to create drama and everything. And that's why we've been seeing, like, a lot more of the original content being rolled out on the WWE Network. we're seeing, WWE Studios as well, too, is, now it's, more deeply immersed in actual, filmmaking, storytelling. Slight was the latest project that just came out last week that they're a part of. So, you can tell, Vince really wants to be more into, the film element in entertainment. But Jesus Christ, man. It was too much of that with that House of Horrors match. It was just so, I respect the fact that you guys have the budget you have to make, a big production that you did with that. Because it was overly produced. I get that. That's cool. But, I don't want that in my wrestling pay-per-view.
No.
No. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
It felt way too out of place and way too super corny. The part of the match where they're actually in the ring, that was better. That was great. Well, compared to the shit in the house?
Well, yeah, obviously.
You know, that was actually refreshing to see that. When they actually got to the ring, I'm like, oh, okay, now this will help me forget about what the fuck I saw earlier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. But, it kind of caught me off guard because I didn't really know that there was going to be I didn't know that match had to have a decisive winner. I thought it was just going to be a brawl. And that's why they made it a non-title match. I thought it was going to be a brawl. So when they did what they did in the house, I was just all right, well, that was a waste of time and, move on. But then when they got to the ring, like I said, at first I was like, okay, cool, they're in the ring. Now we have a match. So I'm like, wait, we have a match? Well, this shit was some non-sanctioned shit. But I don't know. It's what it is.
Yeah. I don't know. It was weird. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so to go down the card real quick, Enzo and Big Cass beat Gallows and Anderson.
Yep.
Which I did not agree with. Jericho defeated KO to win the US title, which shocked me because I really thought that KO was gonna retain. But it was a different story the next night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said earlier, Austin Aries, he beat Neville by DQ. We had the Hardy Boys. They beat Cesaro and Sheamus. And dude, how cool was that seeing a heel turn?
It was good. It was good. Their whole little story isn't bad. I'm actually pretty happy with it. They were sniffing each other, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I liked about the match too. It felt like not old school tag team wrestling, but it just felt it had that early 2000 vibe to it.
Right.
And I don't know how to explain it. Maybe because the Hardys were in it, but it felt really cohesive. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It felt things were kind of going really well together. Story matched with a good story, and plus, with the very end, the heel turn. I love a good heel turn. I really was not thinking about that actually happening. But then, so when it happened, I was like, "Oh shit!" And so, but then, you think about it, it makes sense because of the energy they had in the back and everything. So, you start putting those pieces together, and you're like, "Ah, goddamn, they got me." Did you see that happening?
I can't say that I called it, but you could almost tell that it was going to happen. It was, I think when they, at the very end of the match, when they're trying to shake hands, I was like, yeah, it's probably going to happen pretty soon.
Yeah.
Especially with the build up for the last couple weeks where they would finish their match and then they would shake hands with each other. They're like, oh, what a sign of respect. And I was like, yeah, it's only a moment of time till someone turns on someone.
Mm-hmm. Right. Hell yeah. When Sheamus and Cesaro came out on Monday, man, they got a cool little look going on, man.
Yeah.
They got a badass look with Sheamus looking like Robert De Niro from Taxi Driver and shit.
Bro, they got like this Hitman thing going on, man. It's kind of smooth.
Yeah, it's good.
Next match, this is another one I was surprised but not surprised. Alexa Bliss, she defeated Bayley and she won the WWE Raw Women's Championship to make history of becoming the first woman in WWE history to win both SmackDown and Raw Women's titles. Please give us your take.
Who else
on this
would it be?
So what's your whole take on your wifey winning the title?
Dude, I'm glad. Not just because I like her, because I hate Bayley. One, I hate Bayley as a champion. Like, but we'll see how long it lasts, I guess, because they're trying to do a whole Bayley Sasha Banks thing. So who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Regardless, I'm happy that Alexa Bliss has a title.
Oh yeah. We talked about this before, like, you know, the whole Bayley effect is, you know, that's the thing is that, like, she's not for me as a fan. I know what fan she is for. She's for that little girl fan, and that's cool. I just, as the old school fan, I just kind of nitpick, like, what I see with her, and I'm just like, oh, God, can you quit acting brand new? But, you know, we talked about them ad nauseum. I know sometimes WWE, at times, they kind of shit on the hometown hero concept. Yeah, they do that a lot. I know they did it with Miz, like, for the first, like, 5 years of his career, where he, like, was never winning in Cleveland. he never won a match in Cleveland. And so when they're hyping, when they're pumping that up, you know, from, because where were they at, San Jose?
Yep.
When they were like from San Jose, California, I mean the crowd went nuts. The crowd they went nuts. So I'm like, okay, that'd be nice for her to hear that shit. But as the match got deeper and deeper, I'm looking at like, WWE might be on some fuck your hometown kind of tip.
Yeah, and they did for sure.
Yeah, and as soon as we saw that Alexa got that W. So she's the new Raw Women's Champion. I had Raw on the background on Monday. I don't know, I was doing something, but I wasn't really paying attention. What happened? Because like they had like every chick in the ring. Did you see it?
Oh yeah. So they did like a Alexa Bliss. So they had everyone in the ring, and then Alexa Bliss came out. And she was like, oh, I won the title, so I deserve a coronation. And she deemed herself the goddess of WWE.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay.
Which she is, so. And then she, like, walked around and she was like, you know, thanks. She was, like, thanking people. So she was like, hey, you know, thanks. Sasha Banks for, like, you know, sucking, thanks all these people. And then she was like standing on this platform and was kind of just like talking about just random nonsense stuff. And then when she was up there, she was like, oh, and I forgot to thank Bayley because I beat you last night. And then Bayley got all butt hurt and then like tackled her. And then it was like, mayhem in the ring.
Huh. Yeah.
That's pretty much what happened.
Hey, did it turn into a six woman tag?
Yeah, it turned into a tag.
Gotcha.
Of course it turned into a tag.
And they didn't have to stay long out there. This match is a six woman tag team match.
Tell me why you sounded like Martin Luther King right there.
I have a dream that one day we will see these six women compete on Raw 3-on-3 for the Women's Heavyweight Champion. I have a dream. All right. I can go all night with that. So are they Are they grooming? Like, who's next in line for her title then? Is it going to be Nia Jax, you think, or is Bayley still in the title picture?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know what their plans are for Raw. Raw just seems so, like, everywhere.
Dude, Raw at times feel like, except for the main event this week, but Raw feels like it's literally thrown together an hour before they go on the air.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's just all over the place. Like, you have, like, super heel champion now, and then it's like, well, who's she going to fight? Like, you know, she's got Sasha.
Right.
She's got Bayley, you know. You got Nia Jax as a heel, so they'll probably have a little back and forth a little bit, but nothing's really going to come of that.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know. I have no idea.
That's the weird thing about it. Is that, like, I guess it's one of those, like, you can't really tell because they don't even know. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it used to always be, from what I understand, that they worked backwards, like where they would work from, okay, this is where we want to be at this point for WrestleMania. Okay, for example, we want to be at this point for WrestleMania 34. Like, we want to be here. So how do we get to that point? We have to, you know, create the storyline to this way we get to that point. And so I'm not sure if they still implement that type of method to their storytelling, or there's like, you know what, we're just gonna ride on the fly and go off the cuff and see what sticks to the wall, and we'll go with that. So that's what it seems like at times. So I don't know.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
So that happened, and then, like, you know, we said then the Bray Wyatt bullshit happened, the House of Horrors. God, that was so bad, And then it felt like it's every B, and, like, you know, it felt like a B movie, like a B horror movie or whatever. And like I said, like, the production value was cool. Like, it looked great. Like, don't trip, but I just don't want that in my wrestling pay-per-view. Seth Rollins, he beat Samoa Joe, which was a pretty dope ass match. That was another match that they went pretty stiff in, and it was really cool. And then Braun Strowman against Roman Reigns, he defeated Roman Reigns. Put that work in, man, for real. They building up the shit out of Braun Strowman, bro.
Mm-hmm. They are, and I'm cool
with
that.
They building his act. I'm with you. Like, whenever you're in the position, when they're in the position where they can build up a new guy. And especially in this way to be, like, you know, like, kind of like in the main event conversation, I'm totally for it. And they're making him look unstoppable, too.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're doing a good job with it.
Yeah. Word on the street is that they're talking about probably having him go up against Brock, possibly. And Brock is probably going to be having programs this year with Braun Strowman. I heard Finn Balor and one other name came up as well, so I can't remember who it was. But I'm freaking interested to see what Braun and Brock could do in the ring, because we got Braun and Big Show, you know, some weeks back, which was an awesome match. And so I can only – so if he brings that type of caliber to a match with Brock Lesnar, then – you know, we got something good then.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then the next night on Raw, I know you need to go through the whole show, because the whole show was shit, but the main event, though, was the triple threat match between The Miz, Seth Rollins, and Finn Balor. Fucking awesome match, bro. This literally was the Raw's match of the year of 2017 so far.
You're gonna go that far and say it?
Yeah, so far. You know, we only 5 months into 2017, and Raw ain't giving a shit. Raw is only giving us the best match Raw has given us so far this year has been Braun and Big Show. I don't really count pay per view matches, just because, like, they're supposed to elevate their game and give us some classics.
or some standout matches, but like as far as like, on TV though, this was like Raw's best match of the year.
All right.
But that was a damn good match, man. And I appreciate the flawed finishes, all that they had in there. And the Miz got the friggin' W, bro. And I think it's good because so now this means since the Miz won the match, he's now number one contender for the IC belt held by Dean Ambrose. And I pray to the Lord that Miz wins that belt again because when he was champion on SmackDown. Good Lord. I mean, dude, it was just beautiful. It was just beautiful days, man.
I just don't like Dean Ambrose.
Hell nah.
He's just not good at all.
Nah. I'm with you on that, man. Like, I feel like the thing is with Dean is, like, you know, we talked about this before, like, I think WWE is in a position where they're thinking to themselves, if he doesn't have the belt, then what does he do? Because I'm not even sure, like, how he fit, like, where he's going to fit. Like, obviously he'll be on the he'll be in the mid-card, but he does not move the needle when he's a champion at all.
Nope.
He doesn't move the needle, and plus the fact, like, and this is War on the Street, so I'm not sure how valid this is, but there's still, from what I understand, there's some heat for him because of how he conducted himself on that Stone Cold podcast. And
still? There's
so,
still heat for that?
Maybe some I still haven't forgotten about heat.
Hmm.
But and I don't know if back in August and everything, but, you know, that's the thing, though, is that, like, you know, what's going to happen with him? Like I'm not a fan of his at all. Like, I don't really care for him because he doesn't – I think that he doesn't really – not that he doesn't take it seriously, but I think it's very sloppy. Like, there's nothing about him that, like, I'm just, like, intrigued by. I'm just like, okay, you're just some erratic-ass dude that, you know, and that's it. You know, there's really not a lot of character. There's not a lot of depth to your character. You know, you're not very interesting. But
right.
To make you interesting, they got to put a title on you, and that doesn't even work. You know what I mean? Because
right.
The last few title wins he's had, I don't think we're deserving. So, I don't know. I hope Miz wins. Miz has all of the – he has everything, you know, that – he has everything that matters. The only thing I just don't like is that he's on Raw. The Universal title does not really mean shit. Miz should be the WWE champion, have a WWE championship run one more time.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm happy with those. I'm happy with those suggestions of yours.
Yeah. But that was a good-ass match, though. So, Raw finally, like, delivered something, so, you know, that was definitely good to see and everything. Speaking of deliveries, though, you know, they always say that the caliber, the quality, the whatever it is of a man is measured by his word.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple of people, and probably some others too, behind those couple of people who were not very good with living up to their word last week. And, yes, we got to talk about this shit. We got to talk about the Fyre Festival.
Oh, my goodness, Fyre Festival.
Now, I know
okay.
That you, because I know you specifically asked me to talk about this, which I totally was down for. But, but yeah, man, go. What's your whole take on this whole thing?
Okay, so I didn't even know, like, Fyre Festival was a thing, right?
Right.
I hadn't heard about it. I didn't know, like, I didn't know it was something that was a thing, right? So
right.
I was, like, chilling one night, and, like, my buddy posted on Facebook. It was like, he was just like, has anyone seen the symbol of Fyre Festival? I'm like, what?
Like, what's that?
So, like, I started looking it up, and I'm like, what is this? And it's like, okay, so for people who don't know, Fyre Festival is or was, a festival that Ja Rule and some other random dude, like, brainstormed together, and they were like, let's have people pay hella money and fly them out to, like, the Bahamas for a festival, music festival. So that sounds all good and dandy until you look at, like, okay, you're looking at anywhere from, like, $1,500 to, like, $12,000 for a ticket.
Right.
You're like, you got to go to the Bahamas for one, which is nice. It's a nice place. And then, like, you get flown out there. If you get VIP, you have, like, a yacht that you can go to. And then they got, like, food available for you. They got living space, all this stuff. They had Migos was on the bill, Blink 182, like, all the fans and rappers. Music in a tropical island sounds great, right?
Right.
So people are getting together. They're flying out to the Bahamas. They get to the Bahamas, and it basically looks like a refugee camp. So they like showed up to the Bahamas, to this island, and they basically found like these dome tents that it looked like they were preparing for like the Hunger Games.
Right.
Of the Bahamas.
And dog, like, okay, my thing with those tents though is like, okay, so if y'all brought those there, y'all knew what y'all were doing. Y'all knew damn well what you were doing.
Right. And then, like, it was, like, pigs and, like, feral dogs running around on the island.
Oh, wow.
And, like, it was just, like, this whole mess of, like, what did we get ourselves into? Like they weren't prepared for what they had, you know, talked about and said that was going to happen. But so it turns out, like, they get there, and there was, like, no food and no water and all this stuff.
Oh, man.
And, like,
yeah.
People were, like, looting and all this stuff on an island. Like, you were all living there for however many days you're supposed to be there. And, like, they wouldn't let people leave, pretty much. They were like, yeah, we don't have any flights for you to leave. They were supposed to have, like, all these, like, gourmet meals. Their gourmet meals were, like, slices of bread with cheese and, like, salad. It was, like...
It was, like, prison food. Straight up.
Yeah, pretty much.
It was, like, prison food.
Like, it was, like, the most struggle plate of all struggle plates. Like, you... Like, it's not like you didn't have money. It was, no, you literally just paid, like, a couple G's for a struggle plate. So it was just like, and then what? So then, like, all these artists are seeing what's happening, and they all start canceling. They're like, "Nah, we're not coming anymore."
But that's the thing though, that they started noticing actually from the jump, like before it all even went down. Like, from what I understand, Blink 182, they pulled out like almost like a week before it happened, right? Or a few days before, maybe?
It could have been.
Just because, like, the communication has been with bad with them. So, like, they were like, hold up, you know, this shit ain't added up.
Right. And then what gets me. What gets me is they're like, one, Ja Rule came out and was like, my bad, it's not our fault though. Dude, you booked the whole thing. It is 100% your fault. Like, you put it all together. That would be like you put together some event and then it doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, and you're like, "Oh, my bad." Like, it's not all me. I mean, I put all the money.
It on me though.
It's not on me. Like, who says that?
Right.
So the funny thing to me is
Ja Rule comes out and he's like, all right, my bad, but not my bad, because, like, it's not my fault. But just FYI, like, everyone's going to get a full refund. So you're like, all right, that's dope. And then he's like, and everyone gets VIP for next year. It's like, who's going to come back? Like, I wouldn't
know.
Even if you paid for me to go next year, I wouldn't go. Knowing what happened this year, nah, I'm straight on that.
Yeah. Here's my question: Where was Ja Rule and Billy McFarland during this all during
I don't
this
know.
Whole thing? Like, were they physically on the island, or were they back? Were they back in the mainland? Were they back here in the States?
I don't know.
That's
they
really
weren't down there.
Why? And that's the thing is that, like, because we didn't see like any like pictures or video or hear any word about them like interacting directly with the concert with the festival goers. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
So
right,
like
right.
for all we know, they could have been back in New York, back in the crib, like looking at their phones, like, oh, that's some bullshit. That's fucked up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows where they were?
Now here's okay. So here's my take, right? Here's my thing on this whole thing. It's so freaking interesting how this all, like, how and why this all went down, like, the way it did. Now, I think that, you know, Billy McFarland, he's, like, you know, like a young entrepreneur.
Who is he? I don't even know who he is.
He's like one of those, like, he's just one of those, like, rich trust fund people who invest money into, like, you know, like, venture capitals, technology, things like that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. I didn't know who he was. I didn't look too deep into who he was either.
No, yeah, he's your typical rich trust fund kid who's got a lot of money, a lot of time on his hands. That's
okay,
what it is.
Okay.
So from what I gather, you know, I feel that, like, you know, it's like he had this idea, create a festival that could potentially be an annual festival that will be on a more luxurious platform, be in the Bahamas, you know, something that's very exclusive, and something that only targets, and they specifically said in the, like, you know, in the ad for it and everything, that they were targeting for the, what did they say? The affluent millennials. That was like their target audience, affluent millennials. And so, like, he wanted to do something very different and very original that stands out from everyone else during festival season. Cool. I get that. That's cool. You know, take a risk. Bringing Ja Rule on was a good way for him to be able to not only partner up with someone who has a lot of notoriety behind their name, but also has a lot of industry connections as well, too. So, you know, when you're able to say, it's a lot easier to be able to go to, like, various bands, various groups, various acts and everything to say, we have this festival, it's going to be in the Bahamas, it's very high class. Ja Rule and I are working on, oh shit, Ja Rule working with you? Oh, okay, you know, that sounds major. Okay, like, you know, sounds big time, count me in. So it's very easy to get the likes of, like, Blink-182, Migos, you know, and other acts to be able to follow suit and everything, right?
Mm-mm.
I think, and it's me, you could say, Maurice, you're wearing your conspiracy theory hat once again, but I am going to put my conspiracy theory hat on. But I really think that, like, this shit was a whole scam by Billy McFarland. And I really don't think, and for real talk, I don't think Ja Rule even fucking, like, was in on it. Like, I think that he really felt like, okay, I'm investing with this guy and everything, whatever. You know, and he's going to, like, you know, use my name, I'm going to get a good cut of this. It's going to be all good, whatever, you know, that could work. But I really think, and I'm going to tell you why, because the reason why I think that he did the scam, not just because he's from New York, and scammers come from New York, but I think that because it's so infamous right now, it's so infamous that it's really freaking fascinating how infamous this is. And the fact that
like we said earlier, dog, the tents were already set up. So because the tents were already set up, that means it was already set up to fail. Like, they were expecting it to fail. And so, and what happened? It got crazy buzz. Because just like how you opened up your analysis earlier, bro, you didn't even know about it. And we talk about you, dog. We talk about you, who you know all the fucking facts that's happening all over the country. Like, you be on this shit. But you didn't know about
right.
this one, though.
Right.
But now, guess what? Every motherfucker in this country knows about this fest now. Everybody know about it. This shit right here went from not a goddamn body know about it, only a few people, to now it's probably on the level of Coachella in terms of it being a household name and people knowing about it now. Like, it's on that level. So next year, what's going to happen next year? All those people who they said, like, you know, they said everybody, you have a free pass to come back next year and everything. True, there will be some people who say, fuck you, I'm out, I'm not going to that shit again. But it's going to be you'd be surprised. It's going to be a lot of motherfuckers who will be like, I want to go because they're going to get it right. And I'm going to be able to say I was there for the fucked up Fyre Fest, and I was there for the fire ass Fyre Fest when it was actually right. But they actually want to be there for that. They actually want to be able to say that they were there for it. So they're going to be back for it. So you already have, like, 75% of the people who are at this year's Fyre Fest, they will be back at the next year's Fyre Fest. And in addition, because of how infamous it is, and because it got the notoriety that it got, you got all kinds of people all over the country and even the world who are saving their money right now because they're like, I want to go there next year. That shit is crazy what happened. And I want to be able to be – I want to be at the place where all that shit went down. Like, people are down for just some wild shit. And especially when you talk about motherfuckers who got these kind of pockets, they got money to burn, bro. They got money to burn. So they don't give a shit. Because me personally, my first red flag would have went up when I saw that price tag goes to the motherfucking Bahamas. Now, the Bahamas, they ain't going to see that with the Bahamas. It's nice and everything. But I ain't dropping 10 sacks to go to the Bahamas. Shit, you go to the Bahamas for $500. Shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? You go,
right.
Seriously, you go there for a sack. That's it. But you talk about 10 sacks to go to the Bahamas? Fuck you. I want to know what the incentives are. I better be in a luxury condo. I better have motherfucking chef Rick Bayless making my meals. I better have a new big booty bitch in my room every night. I better have all that shit. I better have fucking Tupac's hologram performing for me when I'm brushing my teeth. All that shit. If I'm driving 10 stacks for the Bahamas. So that should have been red flag number one from the get. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think this is a big-ass money grab for Billy McFarlane and Ja Rule, more so for Billy McFarlane. And because of how infamous it is right now, because it's created so much curiosity, motherfuckers are going to be there next year. And it's probably going to sell out super quick next year. Super quick. And I bet your ass is going to be looking online talking about, well, damn, man, the $1,200 tickets ain't that bad, man. Oh, shit, they got Migos. They got Alesso. Oh, shit, they got Katy Perry. Oh, fuck it. I'm going to book my ticket. Fuck it.
I'm crazy. I'm not that crazy.
Fine, I know Reese will talk shit, but fuck, I'm going to go. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying. Like,
I'm gonna go just so I can talk about it on the show.
right. You're our live correspondent. Right. now they paid us to be down there. Shit, we there. I'll eat the struggle plate.
I'll eat cheese on bread. Like,
okay. but yeah, man. So personally, I think that like. I think this is all kind of a ruse from the get. And he was looking at it like, you know what? It's going to suck that weekend, but on the back, it will get hit with a lawsuit. They got hit with a $100 million lawsuit. So I hope Billy McFarlane has a really great lawyer, but he know, they expected this was going to happen.
But they're like, on the back end, it's going to be freaking glorious. And I'm telling you, I think this shit is going to, like, really cash out next year when they do it again. I really think it is.
All right. All right. We'll report back next year.
We'll keep you all posted on the Fyre Festival, details and all.
2018.
Right. Keep on listening. Keep on listening. So, I got a question I want to ask you.
All right.
So, we know that, you know, it's your birthday weekend this year, this weekend, excuse me. It's your birthday weekend, so on Cinco de Mayo, and typically every year for Cinco de Mayo, we are very accustomed to a very big championship boxing fight that happens every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, Canelo Alvarez is fighting Chavez Jr., right? Are you watching the fight?
No.
Okay. I don't have any plans on watching it either. I'm just
I'm not big into boxing. Like, I'm the guy that'll watch, like, the big boxing matches, like,
right,
everyone talks about.
Yeah.
So I'm the guy that'll watch, like, so, like, I follow UFC, right? So if I didn't follow UFC, I would be the guy that's like, oh, McGregor's fighting, I'm going to watch that fight. Or
right.
Ronda Rousey's fighting, I'm going to watch that fight. I'm with that with boxing, right? So I know Canelo's huge and he's a big household name, but, like, I'm not Hispanic, so I'm not going to watch him fight, you know? It'd be like
right.
A Filipino person that's like, oh, Manny Pacquiao's fighting tonight. I'm going to watch him regardless, like, because I'm just going to watch him because that's what I'm supposed to do.
I feel you. Right.
Yeah, so I'm not – so, yeah, I would not be watching the fight just because I don't care enough about it to go out of my way to watch the fight.
Okay, gotcha. And I'm actually glad that you said what you said right now because that kind of goes into my point. With that said, I pose this question. Does boxing severely miss Floyd Mayweather? Does the sport of boxing miss Mayweather? And the reason why I'm saying this is because what you just said right now, I'm sure a lot of people are kind of echoing those same statements. The fight, if you're like a boxing enthusiast, then it's a pretty big deal. It's a big deal. You know, like, why is this fight happening? Canelo Alvarez is, you know, arguably the number one boxer, you know, in the world right now. You know, so he is box office right now and everything. He's a box office name. And he's fighting Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who's the son of Julio Cesar Chavez, you know, the greatest boxing champions of all time. So it is a big deal. But the thing is, though, it doesn't have the mainstream appeal. You're not seeing people talk about this fight. You're not seeing, you're not seeing, like, little, like, ads on Facebook and on Twitter or Instagram about this fight at all. You have to actually, like, you know, kind of dig into it. You know what I mean? But when Mayweather was fighting, though, whenever Mayweather fight was coming up, that's all everybody was talking about. I saw something very amazing. The day of Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget. That was May of 2015. I'll never forget going, because I was running errands that day during the daytime, and I knew I was going to see the fight at Carlos' house. She had a big fight party. And during the day, I was running errands. I was going to some stores and everything like that. 100% of the people that I saw that were at the stores that I was at were all preparing for the fight in some way, shape, or form. They were buying beer. They were buying chips. They were getting wings. They were getting chips. That's a chip slice?
You get chips slice.
God damn it. For the muscle. They were getting pop. They were getting, you know, they're getting party favors. They're getting paper plates. They were getting anything that was parallel or germane to a fight party. They were getting ready. Like, every cart had beer, liquor, whatever, in it, had party favors. That was like a holiday. I think it was like May 2nd, I think, that year. It was like a freaking holiday that we were celebrating. It was insane. It was so freaking interesting seeing how that was. 100% of the people were getting ready. This fight, ever since Mayweather has retired, when he last fought Berto, it's not been the same. Like, it has not been that big fight feel. Now, I posed this question on Facebook, and we got a response from Carla Torres Martinez. And so when I asked the question, her response was, and I quote, "No, he's a terrible person and is boring as fuck." So then I clarified the question to Carla, asking, I understand what your proclivity is about Floyd Mayweather, but what about the sport of boxing itself? And her response was, I said, "Is boxing missing him?" And her response was, I quote, "No, his boxing pay-per-views didn't generate buys unless he fought during Mexican holidays. He didn't have super hype events." And I thought that was very interesting. He said that. True, he was strategic on making sure he fought on the weekends of either Cinco de Mayo or Mexican Independence Day weekend, because he recognized his market, and his market is the Latinos, because Latinos, from what I've seen, I'm not trying to make a blanket statement or anything. Latinos in general, they follow a lot of boxing. That's a sport that, like, they dominate. They do exceptionally freaking well in, and they have it cornered. And plus, like, the following is naturally big, and everything, which is dope. So he understands the market, so he makes sure to always strategically make sure that his fights sell, you know, on those dates, which is smart business, you know. But I gotta tell you though, the thing is though is that, what do I always say, Danny? Men lie, women lie, but numbers never lie. When you look at the top 10 highest grossing grossing pay per view boxing fights, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the top 10, 1 through 5, Mayweather dominates 3 of the 5 slots. Mayweather versus Pacquiao, May 2015, the pay-per-view buys, 4.6 million. The revenue, $410 million. Number 2, Canelo Alvarez versus Mayweather, September 2013, the pay-per-view buys, $2.2 million. The pay-per-view revenue, $150 million. Number 3, Mayweather versus Oscar De La Hoya, May of 2007. Pay-per-view buys, $2.4 million. Pay-per-view revenue, $136 million. And then 4 is Tyson and Evander Holyfield, $1.9 million buys, $100 million. And then number 5 is Tyson versus Lance Lewis, $1.95 million, $112 million. So Mayweather brought the money in. No pun intended. He brought the money in. When you look at that, that's a significant leap when you go from Tyson and Lance Lewis at number 5 being $112 million in terms of pay-per-view revenue to number 1, which was Mayweather and Pacquiao, which is damn near $500 million. So that's what I'm saying. Like, that kind of money, boxing misses that. They got to miss. They have to miss that. I don't care if you hate the man. I don't care if you love the man. I don't care if you're in the middle somewhere, but when it comes to what he has done, the numbers don't lie at all. And they prove that motherfucker made the money. And
I am very, very curious, super curious to see what this weekend's going to bring in, money-wise. I'm highly curious. Because I know goddamn well it ain't gonna bring in $410 million. Shit. It would be lucky, bro. And I'm not even on the hating shit right now. But it would be lucky if it brings in $50 million. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be a dick. I'm just saying, like, because ain't nobody talking about it, fam.
They're not. But, so boxing is definitely in a different place now, right, without Mayweather. And you know me,
right.
I hate Mayweather.
Oh, yeah.
He did a lot for the sport. He brought in a lot of money. And I think it's just different because, like you said earlier, regardless of whether you hate him or whether you like him, like, he brought money in. And I think the issue is every time Mayweather fought, you either really loved him and you were like, yes, your perspective, I'm seeing, oh, it's a Mayweather fight. I love the guy. I'm watching the fight, right?
Right.
That's your mindset. You like the guy, so obviously you're going to watch that. And then you've got the reverse side that's like, I hate Mayweather. I'm going to buy the fight because I want to watch him lose. I want to see that first loss, right?
Right.
But then you look at, like, when it was Mayweather-Pacquiao, like, that was – that's our Tyson, like, you know, that's our huge Tyson fight. That's our huge Thriller in Manila fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And so that was one of those things that, like, people watched to watch because that's what everyone was doing. You know, I feel like whether you like boxing or not, you watched that fight because you were like, oh, this is like one of those, this is one of those history things, so I'm going to watch it.
Hell yeah. Everyone else is doing it.
You know what I mean?
Everybody's watching that fight. Hell yeah.
Right. So does boxing miss Mayweather? Yes. They do. 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I don't think it's about the money. I think it's about just the hype and getting it out there. Because, again, no one is talking about the fight this weekend unless you're actually into boxing. Whereas
Right. Before
it was like, oh, Mayweather's fighting. I hate that guy. I'm going to go watch this fight because I want to watch Blue. Or
right.
Mayweather's fighting. Oh, I love that guy. I can't wait to see another W.
Right.
And so I think boxing misses the buzz of it. Of course, they miss the money of it, but no one's talking about boxing. No one cares right now, right?
Yeah.
Because
that's the thing too as well. Like, you know, you gotta think about, because back in like 2000, I would say to like 2006, 2007 probably, when UFC was like really making a lot of noise. And UFC, I remember it was probably 2006, 2007, around that time. The very first time I saw ESPN SportsCenter cover UFC, they actually were talking about, was it Randy Couture and what's his name, Chuck Liddell? I think was it that fight? It was one of those super fights. I think it was Couture and Chuck Liddell. And ESPN was actually talking about the fight, and they were talking to Joe Rogan. And Joe Rogan, he used that platform. You know, that was Joe Rogan's a smart dude. That's one smart guy. Like, I would love to be able to have a sit-down chat with Joe Rogan because he is so fucking interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Rogan used that platform on that episode, and he pumped the shit out of that, not only that fight, but the brand of UFC as well. And I will never forget the way how he pumped it. And he even said boldly, he looked directly into the camera, and he said, this is taking over boxing. Mixed martial arts is
is going to kill the sport of boxing. And that's why you need to watch the pay-per-view this weekend. That's why you need to watch the fight. This way you can understand why I'm saying the words I'm saying right now. I was like, damn, that was fire. That was fire. And that was, and I'm like, that was the indicator right there where I'm like, the sport of boxing is about to die because of what he just said right there. And that's when MMA, I swear to God, Danny, had a fucking fire lit under his ass. And it went and it went and it's freaking skyrocketed. That's when you started seeing like the Ultimate Fighter reality show. That's when you started seeing Spike TV bringing on UFC. That's when you started seeing Fox. That's when you started seeing Bellator. You know what I'm saying? Being born and whatnot. You started seeing so many entities of MMA becoming what it was. It was after that happened. But that's what I'm saying. Boxing was at a very low point when that was happening because nobody was talking about boxing at that point until. Mayweather started opening his mouth and he started becoming a showman, and boxing realized that they had a pot of gold with that man, and they put him in the driver's seat, they put him in the forefront, and he brought the sport back to life single-handedly. He saved the sport. He made boxing interesting again. He made boxing what it was back in the early 90s when Tyson was knocking motherfuckers out left and right. He revitalized and gave it the shot of adrenaline that it needed in the arm. And he did it. And so now he's gone. He's retired. I never thought from the get-go that the whole fight between him and Conor McGregor was ever going to happen. But it's looking less and less likely every day. I don't think it's going to go down. So this could be – there's a position right now where boxing is kind of vulnerable, bro. And if I'm UFC, if I'm Dana White's bitch ass, I'm looking at this like, hey, boxing is kind of vulnerable. Who do we got that we can plug, that we can pump up? You know what I mean? What young blood we got out there that we can put in the forefront, put in the driver's seat, put that battery in his back and watch him fly. You know, like that's what I'd be thinking if I was them. Because boxing is very vulnerable right now. Very vulnerable.
It is. I feel like UFC, like UFC is like wrestling. I feel like it's never really going to die.
Nah.
Because there's such a following of it, right? There's such a following, and, like, there's people that'll watch, like, every single one. Like, and then it's not even UFC, but you're looking at, like, UFC, you're looking at Bellator, you're looking at all that stuff, like, you know, the Fight Night, all that. Like, it's
right.
there's so much behind it, you know? Whereas with boxing, I don't think boxing will ever die either, but it's going to be – there is no, like – is there even an up-and-coming guy that anyone's even talking about?
See, I think there are a few, but that goes back to what we said earlier about this fight. It's only the boxing enthusiasts know about it. You know what I mean? They know about who the next big things are, but it's only going to be the next big thing to them. Boxing needs the next big thing to the Smith family that lives down the street that doesn't know shit. They need the next big thing to them. They don't need the next big thing to the niche audience. Just like what you said, it's like with pro wrestling. Us, you and I, we know the new motherfuckers are going to be coming up. We know the stars of tomorrow. But the Smith family down the street, they probably don't know the stars of tomorrow. They still know about Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and The Rock.
Yeah,
and that's all they know about wrestling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you and I, we can articulate that. You know, we can talk about that. You know, we can talk about Nakamura. We can talk about AJ Styles. You know what I mean? We can talk about, you know, like, we can talk about, like, you know, Finn Balor, things like, you know, old boy, what's his nose? Robert Roode. Bobby Roode. Wait, Bobby Roode.
Robert Roode.
I went really formal with that, man. I don't know why I even in my mind.
Who's your favorite wrestler? Robert Roode.
Why, I don't know why he said that. Oh, wow. But, you know what I'm saying? Like, we can talk about that shit. But, and that's the thing is that, like, you know, with UFC, you know, like, they need that guy where the Smith family down the street can talk about him.
Yeah. It's UFC so hard, though. Like, the sport of mixed martial arts and even boxing, like, there's just so much of it everywhere that it's so hard to keep up with that you really have to put yourself out there and be different. Like, you got to be a Pacquiao, a Mayweather, a Conor McGregor, like, Anderson Silva. Like, you have to be one of those guys because if not, you're just going to get lost in the fold of everyone else. You know,
yeah.
because you got Joe from around the corner who fights, you know, MMA, and he does it at the casino. But and
right.
you got like him, you got everyone else, and like and everybody wants to do it. Everybody wants to be a UFC fighter. Everybody wants to be a boxer. But you just have so much of it everywhere that like you really, really do have to do something to put yourself out there. And it's like I think it's tough because. With professional wrestling, you're playing a character, right? And with boxing,
right.
with MMA, like, you're not technically playing a character. I feel like Conor McGregor plays a character. Like, he's probably
he does.
A fairly nice guy, but, like, for show, and he knows that he has to do what he needs to do to make money. And I feel like Mayweather is the same way. He's probably not, like, the biggest douche on earth, but... whatever he portrays to bring people in, like, it works, right?
Yeah.
So, and people like that. People like, because you had two types of people that gravitated towards Mayweather. You had people that absolutely loved him because they're like, dude, this dude's a dick, I absolutely love him. Or you've got people that are like, this dude's a dick, I hate him, right?
Yeah.
Those are your two. Like, the same goes for Conor McGregor. You have the same people. I don't like him because he's arrogant. I love him because he's arrogant. You know, so it's like
right.
there's so much of it out there. It's so saturated. Those markets are so saturated that it's like it's hard because you want to be different, but at the same time, you almost have to conform to what they're doing to be on the radar, right? You got to be
right.
You got to run your mouth. You got to do this. You got to do that. And it's just hard, but then people look at it, and it's like, you look at, like, all these boxing guys, right? And they're like, man, I want to make it. I want to get out there. What do I do? Oh, I need to go run my mouth. And then the thing that sucks is like, oh, well, he's just trying to be like Mayweather, you know? And then you're like, oh.
Right, right.
And then the same thing goes with, like, MMA guys. Oh, he's just trying to be like Conor McGregor. And then...
Yeah.
With wrestling, it's a little different because you can make up anything. You can be a vampire, and everyone's like, dude, that's dope. Or,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or you could be a trash man, and it's like, this guy's kind of dope. Or
yeah.
You could be a clown, and people will love you. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
There's, you got so much more to work with as opposed to like boxing and MMA where it's like, oh, well, you're just biting on this person. You're biting on that person. So I think it's harder
right.
for these guys. So that's why I think that's why it takes so long because, I mean, think about it, right? Boxing was huge when we were growing up because we had people – oh, you look at it like, okay, so you had with our parents growing up and stuff, they had Muhammad Ali. Like, that guy ran his mouth. It did everything. Great boxer.
Right.
But he was huge, and people watched his fights. And then fast forward a couple years after that, and then we get Tyson, you know? So then,
right.
Tyson was huge, and then we didn't really have much as far as boxing went. And then Fast forward years after that, then we've got Mayweather. So the cycle continues, but we have to forget about it for a little bit.
Good point.
So
good point.
I'm assuming we're early to mid 30s right now. I'm thinking boxing probably won't be big again for, I don't know, maybe 5 years.
Right.
So when we're like 40, I feel like we'll have our next guy, right?
Good point.
Because Adrian Broner tried, but he's just like an exact clone of Mayweather.
Yeah, and he's like all fucked up. He's all kind of messed up and everything, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Boxing goes through, it's lulls. You know, it hits its high points, then goes through a series of, like, lulls, and then it carries more to, like, the hardcores. Then it gets a battery put in its back, and then once again, it's just carrying to the casual fan. That's a good point. That's true. I'm with you on that. That's true. Yeah, so it's probably a lull right now. And then eventually there will be another like, you know, big name and everything. I just thought it was interesting. Because, you know, I've gotten so accustomed to the single day mile weekend and also Mexican Independence Day weekend being that big ticket, big money, big card, big main event boxing fight. I've gotten so accustomed to it that, like, now that when it happens, I can't help but compare to the heyday of when Mayweather was out there, and I'm just like, God, man, it's so damn light. It's so light, and I really want to be able to, like, because I was gonna, like, you know, pay attention to see, like, you know, what went down with Alvarez and Chavez, but man, it's just light, and I hate that. I really miss the shit talking on Facebook. I really miss the shit talking because, woo, man. Like, I would live for those posts. I would live for those posts, man. And shout out to your boy, John. And I will never forget how mad he was that night when Mayweather won, when he beat Pacquiao. Your boy was tight. Your boy was heated, boy. He was heated. Oh, man. But it's all fun, man. It's all fun. I just love a good banter. I love some good back and forth, some good roasts, some good shit talking, and I miss that. I miss that a whole lot, man. For real. I remember the night when Mayweather beat Pacquiao. After the fight, after Mayweather was declared the victor. I think my post was. Some smug shit where I said, "Glad I'm the kind of guy who told you so." No, glad I'm not the kind of guy who said I told you so. Hey, Carla comments. She just comments. Just all it says, "Fuck you." I was rolling. She remembered that. Shout out to Carla. This other cat, Jamel Curtis Barker Jr. He mentions Joshua versus Klitschko. I had to look that up because I didn't know what that was. I guess Anthony Joshua versus Vladimir Klitschko, but that fight happened April 29th, so last week. So I don't even know what happened. Who won that fight?
I think Klitschko lost. I want to say.
Klitschko lost? I have no idea.
Let me see. I knew the match happened.
Oh, wait. Every Joshua knocks out Vladimir Klitschko.
Yep.
And I guess it was a thriller. The greatest fight Wembley Stadium has ever seen. I challenge that because Wembley Stadium had Bret Hart versus Davey Boy Smith, and that right there was probably the greatest fight that Wembley's ever seen. But What do smart people say when they go off track?
What do smart people say when they go?
Yeah, I digress.
I don't know.
You know, smart people say that shit.
I'm not smart.
No, neither am I. But you know how you hear that shit like on PBS or something like that. Well, I digress.
PBS.
I always want to use that in a real life term. But I digress. I'm like, damn, I never. I'm like, when am I ever in a situation where I say that? Like, I'm always with knuckleheads and goons.
There's never a situation for you to say that ever.
Right? Like, I think you would get your ass kicked by your friends if you say that in front of your boys.
Yeah.
But I digress. Especially your friends. You're like, the fuck are you saying to me?
I know. My friends would be like, what?
You can leave now.
Right.
Oh, man. Speaking of leaving, man. Your boy Jesse Williams, man.
That's your boy, because I didn't even know who he was.
Hey, y'all. This cat, I'm like, all right, so we do a little bit of light prepping. You know, we're not that professional for the show. You know what I'm saying? We still go off the
clearly, stuff, if you listen to the show.
Right, they're like, yeah, no shit. You guys are awful. But we do a little bit of light prepping where I'm like, all right, let's talk about this, you know what I mean? I'm going to do a little post, and then boom, we can go from there. You know, that's like all of our prepping for the show, basically. Just do text messages and everything, right? And so I'm like, man, let's touch on this whole Jesse Williams shit, too. This nigga, like, who the fuck is Jesse Williams?
Is he related to Montel?
Oh. What were you saying?
I said, is he related to Montel Williams?
Oh, man, I thought that was funny as hell, man. He said, who the fuck is Jesse Williams?
Like, who's that nigga? I'm like, so anyway, so what does he do?
He's like, he's talking to me like I stole this cat. Yeah, so for y'all, for those, we ain't going to be on this that long. But I thought it was very interesting because Jesse Williams, he's an actor. He's an activist as well, too. Very huge in the Black Lives Matter movement. I love his brother. He's awesome to me. He's an actor on Grey's Anatomy. All the chicks, they like that show and they dig him. So he's got the light skin and blue eyes or whatever. So he apparently divorced his wife. Him and his wife going through a divorce. I think he's got one or two kids with her or whatever like that. But they're going through a divorce. The divorce was announced like last week sometime, but then a day or two later, it pops up that he with Mindy Kaling. And I'm
who
like,
is that? Who is she?
She's an actress as well.
Okay.
Very attractive. Very attractive. You should look her up.
I don't know.
Very pretty.
I don't know who she is.
You should look her up, real soft.
All right. So one moment, please. Okay, continue with your story.
Yeah. So he's with her like a couple days later. And so it just kind of shows that like, oh, man, that's some bullshit. Because I thought it was funny at first. Because at first, like, when I heard about it, I'm like, oh, man, that would be hilarious if he get with some, like, smashing some, like, some IG hoe or something like that. And granted, Mindy Kaling's not, she's not IG hoe, but I know it's funny as hell. So it just kind of shows that, like, have they been talking for a while he was married? Like, you know, have they been kind of, like, you know, keeping the show on the low? You know what I mean? So all these people are all up in arms about it and everything. Like, you know, how can he do that? That's some bullshit. But
this dude got her? Oh, my goodness.
You know why he caught her, though? Because he can speak he speaks very well. But the brother is smart. That brother is very smart, and he speaks extremely well. And you know, women love that shit. They love a man who got the gift of gab.
Debatable.
It wasn't debatable. You don't think so?
It depends on who you talk to.
I think women, as they get older, they lean more towards the more distinguished, more articulate kind of men. Like the guys who sit there and say, nah, man, I don't know, Joe, no, man. Like, that shit was cute probably, like, when you were 21, 22 years old or whatever. You didn't know, any better. But when you get to your, like, late 30s, 40s, or whatever like that, you kind of want a man that knows how to be able to string a sentence, a complete sentence together.
Maybe. This goes back to what we were talking about on the past show, about, like, how some girls are all about, like the project guy, you know, like the guy that we can save him.
right. The thug, yeah.
You know, so it's like, so I don't know. So I look at
but that,
like, do they really want an articulate person, or they just want some hoodlum?
But that shit fades out after a while. That shit gets played out. Because it gets to a point where the chick is looking like, hey, look, motherfucker, I got bills. We got to pay bills. We got shit to do. I want to travel a little bit. You know what I mean? I would go out to eat and not to fucking Applebee's, but I'm talking about something actually nice for once. Like, they get to a point, you know what I'm saying? They get to a point where they actually want some quality in their life. And they actually want to be able to, like, actually maintain a lifestyle and not like on some, like, you know, high luxury shit, but to be able to, like, you know, keep their heads above water. And when you have the brother man who don't do shit, be at the crib all day, smoking the weed, playing the Xbox, you know what I mean? You know, scratching his dick or whatever. When you got that kind of cat, that can play it out. Like, hey, you gotta get up. I don't care how good his stroke game is. After a while, you're like, hey, bills gotta get paid, bro.
Yeah, I guess.
And that's why I think that, and plus fact, not only with that aspect, but also women, when they get older, they are more in tune in terms of, like, you know, their own, like, satiating their own intellect, their own self, their own fulfillment, you know, as a person. They want to be able to actually have a conversation with a man about subject A, B, and C. And it doesn't have to be about, you know, like, something that's, like, very remedial, something that's on a little bit of a larger scale. Seriously. One thing women and ladies, whomever is listening that's a lady, seriously, let me get your input on this. Because one thing women do like, that they really do gravitate towards, they love a man that's very, that can be very articulate and very poignant about something that they are passionate about, and they explain it very, very well.
Is that why you use
anything,
big words?
Huh?
Is that why you use big words?
Don't be giving away my tricks.
My name is Maurice. I articulate well.
Stupid. But fam, no, real talk though. Like, it could be about any subject. Like for your case, you are. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I'm like, you know, Danny knows every fucking thing about shoes. It's ridiculous. You and in current fashion, you are very poignant. You are very learned when it comes to shoes, the shoe game.
That's not sexy.
No, but dog. But check it out though. If a female, not saying like you're talking to her about it directly or whatever, but let's say if a woman catches you in the middle of a conversation with like someone else who like kind of knows your stuff as well too, or who's not on your level yet, but they catch you in the middle of a conversation where you're able to articulate what you do know about this type of brand, this type of make, the material that's being used, where it ships from, why it is quality versus another brand of shoe or whatever like that. If they overhear that, to them, they're like, damn, who is he?
Who is he? What's his name? I need to know that brother. Don't say that.
Yeah,
find, real talk.
Find me that girl and send her my way then.
dog, I'm for real. Like, seriously, because that shows that you have that you do have a very strong grasp on a particular subject, and you're able to explain it very clearly, and you know, and passionately, so that it makes you very interesting. And that's what women want. Women just want, they want to be able to gravitate towards a man that's interesting and different, and that will be different. Ladies listening, seriously, am I wrong about this? Hit us up, mdxpodcast1@gmail.com. Seriously, hit us up and let us know. Are we wrong? Am I wrong about that? And is that what y'all like? Don't y'all like a man that is interesting? That like kind of intrigues you. That kind of makes you go, who this guy? What he about? That's different. Okay, I'm with you. Now you got my attention. Am I wrong? You know what I mean, dog?
Yeah, I guess.
So anyway, I thought the whole thing about Jesse Williams and Mindy Kaling was interesting because it tied back with our conversation from last time about how relationships are so, like, funny. And this is where I kind of go back to my question. I've asked you on a few occasions, and I brought on the show a couple times as well, too. Is monogamy man-made? Is monogamy man-made? And dog, I think about it, and I'm just like, could it be? You know what I mean? Like, is it? Because you think about it, and think about this too, G. The business of marriage on both ends, on both sides of the table, getting married and getting divorced, there is so much money that's involved. There's so much money that's involved in both processes, right?
Mm-hmm. You're about to get into some conspiracy theory about marriage. I can see it. I can see it coming.
You're seeing the hat come on, right?
Yeah, you're like, you know what? Maybe people get married knowing that they're going to get divorced so that they can get money out of this because Illuminati and Ja Rule decided to come up with Firecrest so that they could all make money off each other because Delta Airlines is about to kick off some other dude on an airplane because Black Lives Matter and our healthcare is gone, but it's all gone because of this conspiracy theory based off of boxing missing Floyd Mayweather.
I mean, you like cover like six shows. You stupid as hell. He's dumb as hell, bro, for real. Oh my god. He's in the Black Lives Matter in there too. He's dumb as hell. Boy, you wildin'. But no, real quick though, I won't lean on it too much. But no, but I'm saying though, because there are a lot of people who are involved on both ends. When
right.
it comes to a marriage, you got the florist, you got the baker, you got the hall director, you got the church, you got the wedding planner. On the other end, when it comes to the divorce, you got the attorneys that are involved, the people who process and everything, the people who process the paperwork and whatnot. The state is involved. There's so much money that's involved in both sides of the process that there has to be an entity that pushes out there where they're like, we want to make sure people go down this route, so this way we can benefit from their love financially. And you know, because shit doesn't work out, we'll benefit once again when they break up. And so that's why I'm saying, like, because is it one of those things where like man says to you, this is the route that you have to go down, is it really the route that we have to go down, or is it the route they want us to go down because there's so much money that they can make from us going down that route? And in Jesse Williams' case, you know, he's kind of the cat that you really expect this from. He seems so, like, okay, like, you know, very together with it, with everything. Obviously, him and Minka have been talking, you know, during his marriage and everything. So it's kind of like, it kind of makes you think, like, damn, even Jesse Williams, too? It's kind of interesting. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. I would love. What?
I said, I guess. You think about way more stuff than I do. I just don't care.
Dude, where those 3 a.m. texts come from, man? Those random texts, those random questions.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the things that go through your head boggle my mind.
But, no, for real, I would love to get feedback. Anybody out there listening, what's your take? Is monogamy man-made? Is it? Am I wrong? Am I right? Like, you know, where y'all at with it? How y'all feel?
Tell him so he can get angry.
What you say?
I said, tell him he's wrong just so he can get angry.
Oh. Oh, believe me, I'm expecting to get told I'm full of shit. That's fine. I just want to know why I am full of shit. If you say Maurice is full of shit, at least back it up with why I'm full of shit. That's all I am. I don't want to empty. You're full of shit. Okay, why? Oh, I don't know. You are. Shut up. Next. Oh, man. But, dude, what happened with Wale?
What do you mean, what happened with Wale?
Overall, what went wrong with Wale, bro? I want you to.
Nothing has gone wrong with Wale.
Nothing?
No. That's okay. So this is why I was really intrigued when you brought this up in our planning meeting.
Uh-huh.
Because Wale is. He is one of the most underrated musicians that there is. However, he's not one of those guys that, like, his music's not played on the radio, right?
Right.
Ever. And he's still, I feel, very underground, and he wants it that way.
Mm-hmm.
He's the kind of guy, like, he's not the guy that, like, someone will listen to on the radio and, like, oh, this guy's dope, so I'm going to keep listening to his music. Like, you have to be introduced to Wale, I feel like, even still today. Yeah, he has 5 studio albums, but the thing is,
right,
is he's like a self-promoter. Like, I follow him on everything because he's, like, one of my favorite rappers. And, like, the dude is out there, like, grinding so that people know that his Shine Tour is coming and, like, all this stuff, but he does it a different way. He doesn't care about, like, he doesn't care about, you know, sharing this and that and tweeting this and that. Like, he's just out there, like, yo, like, I have a new album out and this is how I'm going to promote it. Like, I'm not going to spend big money on it. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. Like, if you listen to my album and you think it's dope, then support it. But I think he makes music because he absolutely loves it and doesn't care what other people think about it.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Now, I'm a little surprised that you're saying this because and I'm based this off of previous conversations that we've had. You seem more of a numbers guy.
No.
Versus.
But I understand how Wale works. And Wale is not a numbers guy. He's like 100% underground. I feel like he's still underground, and he still lives that mindset.
Okay. So he's more of like,
So he's more about, like, you know, about remaining, I guess, like, you know, on par, so to speak, for his target audience.
I think so. Because, like, I look at my favorite group, like Hieroglyphics. Like, nobody knows who Hieroglyphics is, you know? But
right.
And I consider them, to me, to be very successful because they don't have – I don't think any of their albums have ever, like, gotten praise or anything like that. But when I look at it, this goes back to, like, when we kept talking about, like, Nicki Minaj and all that stuff, the Nicki and the
right.
Remy Ma stuff, like, when it comes to, like, because you were saying, like, the streets, right? You was like, oh, Remy Ma won in the street. But the thing
right.
was, but in that particular situation is, you were using, there was someone from the streets going up against someone who's a pop star, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the way I'm looking at Wale is an underground person staying in the underground, right? And so if he were to get big and blow up, he's not true to himself of what he
uh-huh.
represents. And so I feel like he hasn't fallen off. It's just that he's, like you said, he's being true to himself with his fans.
Right.
So, like, that's where I think it's like a Gatorade commercial that uses a Souls of Mischief song, and I'm just like, this isn't right, because I'm like, they sold out, like, their song is, like, on national TV now.
Right.
And so that's weird to me, and so, like, being that type of fan, I'm just like, this just doesn't seem right. Like, the first time I heard it, I was like, dude, there's no way that Souls of Mischief is on a Gatorade commercial right now.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I wasn't pissed about it, but I was just like, it's weird because, like, they have that type of success. You don't expect it from those guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, again, Wale's one of those guys that, like, he doesn't do the stadium thing. Every time I've seen Wale, it's either been at a festival because a lot of people are there, or it's been in a really small venue.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
he's not a, I'm going to go sell out like a football stadium or anything like that. I don't think he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think
he's satisfied with, like, the lane that he has.
Yeah, I think he's happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Now, here's my thing. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh. Now, here's my thing. Now, this is not a Maurice, you know, talking shit about Wale kind of thing. I think I like the brother. I think he has an amazing pen game. I think lyrically he's fantastic. Like what you said earlier, he's highly underrated in terms of not being recognized for the content that he puts out. I thought the last album that he did, the album About Nothing, was great. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the album, and I loved the rollout for that album. I thought it was, I enjoyed every second of it, of that rollout. It was original. It was very different. It was an opportunity to cross to bring over a crossover audience as well too. I thoroughly enjoyed that rollout as much as I did the album. I liked the album as well too. But my concern is this though. And this is why I open it up with what happened with Wale, because something went wrong. Wale came in with that class of guys like, you know, of, like, you know, your Kendrick Lamars, your Drakes and Big Sean's. He came in with, like, you know, with that class of guys. And these four men, Wale, Kendrick Lamar, Big Sean, and Drake, have released albums in 2017. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Why is Wale's projections the way that they are? And what's going down the line? Kendrick Lamar's Damn album was projected to was projected at 170,000 sales for the first week, and as we already know that it freaking like, you know, kicked down the door and went to 600,000, you know, for that very first week, and now it's a certified platinum album. But it was projected at 170,000. Drake's More Life, that was projected a lot. Look at me, a lot.
Anything by Drake is projected a lot.
Yeah, no doubt. Drake's projection, I believe, was close to about 200,000 for More Life, and surpassed that, going to 225,000 for the first week that it came out. Big Sean for I Decided, that was projected to sell about 120,000 to 130,000 total. And with like about 65,000 or so being the first week, but so that would be the total. Wale's projection for his new joint, we're talking about 18,000 to 22,000. So my thing is like,
I have your answers, by the way. I have your answers. Okay.
And I think I know what you're going to say, because I think what you're going to say is what I'm thinking. And
probably.
So my beef, really, not even with the artist, not with the artist at all. My beef is with not Maybach Music Group, but the distributor label. I'm not sure who Maybach's under. Are they under, like, Universal or Capitol?
I think it's Atlantic.
Atlantic? Okay, and that's where my fucking beef is at. I'm just like, what are y'all doing, or what are y'all not doing to ensure that this artist right here is not aligned with his contemporaries, is not aligned with the likes of Drake, the likes of Big Sean, and the likes of Kendrick Lamar in terms of projection. You really are projecting for him to sell under 25,000 units? That's fucked up. That just lets me know that you're not even trying to put forth the effort to actually have him break 100,000. And that's the problem, is that like, you're seeing these big labels who are on that level, like Atlantic, who are very cherry picking, you know, whom it is that they're going to promote. And I hate seeing that, because all that does is that it makes us as consumers and as fans of hip hop, we miss out on quality artists. Def Jam is the same shit to Logic, and Logic is on some fuck you shit with Def Jam, but he can't leave it because he's on a contract. But they did the same shit with Logic. They did not promote him. They did not, you know, they did not give him a proper rollout. He still. Does his own marketing as if he's an independent artist. And that's my beef I have with a lot of these labels that do that shit to a lot of these artists, that they only go so far with them when it comes to the marketing. And sadly, I feel Wale has fallen victim to the negligence of Atlantic. Well, what are you going to say? What's your answer, bro?
My answer is why people don't listen to Wale.
Wait, we say white people?
White people don't. You look Kendrick Lamar. White people love Kendrick Lamar. White people love Drake. White people love J. Cole. White people don't listen to Wale at all. So he's not going to get those streams, those buys. Like, it's hard because he's not a mainstream artist. He's not he's just not, you know. And that's the thing that sucks, is that it's a double-edged sword, because you look at it, you're like, Wale is dope. You know he's dope. I know he's dope. Everyone that listens to him knows he's dope. But the thing is he is probably really, really happy about not being a sellout in that regard, because he's being true to himself as an artist and true to his music. Like, he's, you know, he's like, I make music for, you know, for where I'm from. Like, people in D.C. love Wale, you know?
True, okay, yeah.
Wale in D.C. is Kanye in Chicago. Like,
right, okay.
And you look at Kanye and how big of an artist he is and how Chicago receives him. But when you go to D.C. and you talk about Wale, it's the same exact way. Because D.C., it was put on the map by Wale. You know?
Yeah.
But the thing is I think he's happy with that. He's happy with the fact that, you know what, I got D.C.'s name out there. Like, you know, people know I'm, people know that Wale is from PG County. Like, what is that? No one even knows what that means. But he's from Prince George's County, right? He put his city on the map. Drake put, you know, Drake put Toronto on the map. And so, but unfortunately, not unfortunately, but his audience is so much broader and, like, everyone listens. He's played on every single station. J. Cole, every single station. Kendrick Lamar is on the radio. He's on the stations. But Wale, he doesn't get plays like that. But the thing is if we're gonna go back to the streets, like, Wale's played in the streets. He's successful there. But he wants to be there. I don't think he cares about winning a Grammy or being on Billboard chart or, you know, winning an American Music Award. I don't think he cares about that. I think he cares for the fact that he made music and people think it's dope, so they're going to go to this 200-500 person venue, sell it out, he can have an intimate show with his fans, and that's it. You know? And then for me as a fan, like, I get to go to a Wale show for $25, $30. The last time I saw Wale, bro, like, he brought me up on stage because I was wearing Redskins gear. And I was kicking it on stage with Wale, you know? And then at a Drake concert, the only person that's going to be able to get up there is a girl, you know, that and not that there's anything wrong with that, but they're like, that girl, she likes Drake probably because she likes the way he looks. It's not because she likes the
fuck
music.
Right?
Whereas at this Wale concert, he could have brought anyone on stage, right?
Yeah.
But he looks down and he sees me front row rapping his songs, repping his city.
Yeah.
That's who he's going to bring up.
True.
You know? And a couple years ago, I saw A+, who is part of Hieroglyphics, he's part of Souls of Mischief, in this really small venue, and there was like 30 people there. And this dude performed like he was in a stadium, and at the end of the show, he was just chilling, walked over to him, said what's up, took a picture with him, and I had Hieroglyphics gear on. My brother had Hyro gear on, and he looked at me, and he started crying, and he said, "You and your brother in the front row wearing my gear, rapping my songs is the reason I do this." And for me, I was like, this dude, he doesn't care about the money. He doesn't care about fame. He cares that people are listening to him and are appreciating his art. So, unfortunately, it's on a lower scale, but that's a satisfaction to them. Whereas if you look at, like, and I think Kendrick fell into that, like, on accident, and he blew up so big. Because I don't think him coming into this, he ever thought it would be the way it is right now.
True. Yeah, I gotta agree with you with that.
Right? Drake?
Yeah.
Drake was like, no, I'm going. Drake is like, I'm getting big. He's like,
He's like, I got Weezy backing me. I'm going to be huge. He knew
he went for the jugular. Yeah.
You know, he knew that was coming. I think J. Cole fell into it as well, where he didn't think it was going to be that way, and he blew up. Him and Kendrick, I think those two just happened to – I think they were just perfect storm things that happened.
Right.
But I look at everyone else, and it's like I don't think they care enough to put that type of effort in because they're happy with their success and they're happy with what they're doing.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's
again,
good point.
It's one of those things where it's like completely different because Wale to the naked eye, Wale is who is this guy? Why does his album suck? It hasn't sold anything. But then you look at, like, the Wale side of things, and, like, the day his album released, his Instagram, his Twitter, he was roaming around the streets of D.C. Like, bro, it's me, Wale. My album just dropped. Everyone's like, yes, right. Wale's album dropped. Like, he doesn't need an ad in Rolling Stone magazine on a Billboard chart. Like, his promotion was him walking in the streets of his city saying, my album dropped, go buy it. And he was content with that.
No, that's true. That's a good point. That's true. I'm here, and I'm with you on all that, too, as well. Like, you know, Wale is very, he's the artist. He's the fan's artist. Like, he is not for the machine. He really is a genuine, this is what grinding gets you, artistry. And
right.
I respect the hell out of that, you know, and that's true. And that's, you know, the thing is, I guess, like, my personal beef is, like, you know, I hate when labels, you know, ignore quality because they think they know what's better. And it's like, nah, you know, you need to listen to the people and everything. I'm very curious as to, like, what Wale is going to be like after rap, because I think he has a lot to offer, you know, with acting. I think he could be that crossover guy to go into acting. He could probably do some. He could probably, you know, we've said it before, like, you know, he needs to do shit with WWE, because he always is very comfortable on the camera. You know what I'm saying? So he was very comfortable on camera. He knows what to do. He knows how to act. He knows how to respond. What to say? How to say it? So I think his after rap career is gonna be something that's gonna be, like, you know, make people pay attention. Like, damn, okay, who is this guy? You got music,
right,
too? Oh, shit, let's listen. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's going to be that kind of path for him, though.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Hey, so Matt Floyd wants to say, he said, he asked you, this is for you, Danny. It's from Matt Floyd. Shout out to Matt. Will the Caps choke it all away again against the Pens, or just in the playoffs in general? Talk about the Capitals and the Penguins NHL playoffs.
Yes, they will. They're down 3-1 in the series. There is no way we're winning 4 games. We can't beat the Penguins. We cannot do it.
Now, I heard that Sidney Crosby's out, though.
We took out Sidney Crosby in game 3 in like 3 minutes. He didn't even play game 3 or 4. We won game 3. We lost game 4. So we can't beat them without Sidney Crosby. It's not happening. It's over.
Wait, but is game 5? Where's game 5 at?
D.C.
Boom. This is how you get back.
We literally have to win the next 4 games, which is not going to happen.
Shit, LeBron did it last year?
That's LeBron. The Caps choke.
Why can't
against
y'all?
The Penguins. Dude, the Caps choke against the Penguins every year. It can't happen. We are literally 1-8 in series against them. It's about to be 1-9.
I don't know, dog. I mean, y'all at the crib, y'all have
y'all coming off a loss, which means y'all probably fired up. You're at the crib in the next game. There's no Sidney Crosby. This is a very likable situation to make it 3-2.
We don't know if Crosby's out for 5.
Huh?
We don't know if Crosby is out for 5. He was out for 4, but we don't know if he'll be out for 5.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought it was like much worse than what they may have seen to be.
No, he got hit, and they basically said he had a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
So, game 5 is on Saturday. So,
okay. So the day after your birthday. Hey, man, all it lets me know is that, like, you know what, if he's in the game, either he'll be groggy and not all there, or y'all just got to lay him out one more time. Be like, oh, let me put your ass out again. Boom! Check!
Check!
I won't hold my breath, though, again. I don't hold my breath when I watch the cap.
Yeah, you want to deal with that stress?
What's that?
You hate dealing with that stress, right?
Oh my goodness, dude, I can't do it.
Dude, it is like it is so stressful when you're, especially when your team is in the playoffs. Like, it's so weird. Like, are you like me? Like, I can sit here and watch and enjoy any other basketball game on the playoffs, but when the Bulls play, like, I'm like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. I am fucking nervous. I'm anxious. I don't want to move. I'm like, you know, I'm damn near, you know, scratching my skin off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Are you like that?
The Wizards. They finally picked up a win.
Oh, they beat that ass tonight.
Yeah, it's stressful. Dude, that's the thing that sucks right now is I got the Wizards and the Caps in the playoffs right now.
You're already going gray.
You know, I'm like, oh my goodness. And then, like, they're kind of booty right now. The Sounders are, like, super booty right now. And I'm just like, ugh.
You're like, where's my levity? Shit.
I know. So it's hard to be a sports fan for me at the moment.
What's happening, y'all? Hey, so this is Maurice, co-host of the MDX podcast. It appears that we had a little bit of a technical difficulty that kind of took place, and so we lost not a lot of the show. Only thing that you guys missed was like my rant on the Chicago Bears and their draft pick, which was, in a nutshell, I don't care about the quarterback. I care for the fact that we gave up the farm for this guy, so this guy is better be fucking Tom Brady. That's all I gotta say. That's it, because what we have going on football wise in Chicago is overly ridiculous, and I'm just kind of tired of it. Anyway, I just wanted to give you guys a proper outro. I just want to thank you all once again for listening. You guys are the best. We emphatically appreciate what you guys do every week when it comes to supporting our show, talking about our show, interacting with us and everything, and it means the world. And like I said before, if you want to, you know, if you want to send us an email, email us at mdxpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, the MDX Podcast. Hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at MDX Podcast. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us some comments. Show us some love on there. And you can subscribe to us on Podomatic. This way you can get the updated shows as soon as they are ready. But once again, you guys are amazing. We had a great time doing this episode. It was a good episode and everything. And it was good to be able to real talk to celebrate another year for my boy Danny. Happy birthday, brother. All right, so let us know what y'all think. If y'all liked it, if y'all hated it, if you were in between, let us know. You know, either way, we'll show y'all some love and everything. And until next time, y'all be easy, all right? Peace. Yes, that's my dog in the background growling. He wants to hang out. Spoiled ass. Holla!